Hello, and welcome to another episode of Jaded HR, a podcast by two former human resources coworkers who just want to help you get through the workday by saying all the things that you were thinking. Say it out loud. I am Patrick Consilis.
And I'm Warren Workman.
And I need caffeine, Warren.
I noticed. You're dragging caffeine a little.
I am dragging. It's been a long quarantine.
So yes, I just it has.
Had coffee on the mind, and I think HR and coffee are one of those beautiful pairs.
See, I'm the oddball there. I can't drink coffee.
But caffeine.
Caffeine? So, I'm a caffeineaholic.
Exactly. So maybe we won't even just coffee. I mean, coffee is great. It's a beautiful thing. But I remember your Big Gulps and your Monsters and all that stuff. So for whatever reason, you know, you always try to come up with a theme for one of these things. And I just like, coffee, I love coffee. Coffee's a fun theme. HR people love coffee. I have plenty of friends in HR who put their Monday morning coffee meme on Facebook every day. So,
coffee connoisseurs we've worked with.
And you and I specifically, I hate the word like coffee snob.
I wouldn't say snob. It's a connoisseur, like a concierge of coffee, or what? Not a
sommelier.
Sommelier. That's the word I'm looking.
You know, they're kind of like a concierge. Like you would go and ask about recommendations for coffee. That might work.
Sommelier,
So I got on a coffee kick, and I think I will save. There's something called the coffee test.
Okay.
This will just be a teaser because I'm going to save it because I thought it was just a really cool. It's actually like an interview test that this guy does for everyone that he interviews for his company. So I'll save that. But I did want to give just a quick. These are Patrick's office coffee tips.
Okay.
Because we worked together and we worked with some bad coffee. I think everyone has like their office coffee pot. So these are kind of tips to help with the office coffee pot.
Oh, even as a non-coffee drinker, sometimes seeing that office coffee pot and how foul it gets or how scaly the Keurig machine gets, I am not a fan.
Yeah, the invention of the Keurig, I think, has helped office coffee, although I hate the environmental impact of Keurig. It does help give you some better quality coffee. But anyways, so the number one tip I can give to help with the coffee pot, and I've tried this to test by I bought a huge bag of Sam's Club coffee that was absolute shit and trash, but we got through it by doing this tip, and that is you add salt to the coffee beans. I don't know if you were there for that experiment or not.
I couldn't tell you.
But me and a fellow coffee drinker at work, we bought a drip coffee for the office because we were tired of using the Keurig and we're tired of running all over the place sharing coffee, so we have a drip coffee that we shared. So I bought this huge bag of coffee, and it was horrible. So I decided, how can I improve this? And it was salt. Put a little bit of salt on the grounds before you brew it. Just a little bit. I think the ratio is maybe like half a teaspoon to your typical amount of coffee you use. And it actually improves the quality of the coffee.
Would it and I learned this trick from all...
Probably not chicory, because that just tastes like trash anyway. But yeah, I learned it from Alton Brown, so it's a legit. He has the science behind it of why it works, but it is legit.
Now I love Alton Brown.
Yes, and another quick tip: we're getting away from like jaded HR, but I really do think HR and coffee is an important thing, as you can tell. And we always tend to get sidetracked anytime we mention food or drink in this show. So this is just another one of those tangents. But I think the ratio of beans to water works. You got to remember that the numbers on the coffee pot are based on 6 ounces. So if it says like if you're filling up to 12 on the coffee pot, that's 12 6-ounce cups, I say in quotes. So you got to keep in mind that. And I always do like one massive scoop per one of those. So that's just, I think the ratio is important. And then use good water. You don't ever like use water that's been sitting out. It's important you use really fresh water.
Yes.
Those are Patrick's office coffee tips to help you get through the day.
Okay. No, very, very good. No, coffee was a staple of our office, and like I said, I was probably the only non-partaker. I tried. I'm just not a bitter fan. I can't do bittery things. I'd do the Frappuccino frozen drinks and stuff when y'all would go to Starbucks or Dunkin' or something, but no, I couldn't do just...
Well, the new thing coffee. Now is like if you look at our office now, it's funny. There's like seven different creamers in the refrigerator. So, and they make some really good Starbucks creamers now. They have like the caramel macchiato creamer and the toffee nut latte, which is my vice. So, and the creamers, like, again, I'm not going to judge you. If it's a ratio of like 3-to-1 cream to coffee, I don't care. You're still drinking coffee. Enjoy it however you want to.
Yeah, that's what I needed to do to get coffee down, put a ton of cream with it, or Kahlua. That works too.
Yeah, make that coffee Irish to get you through the day. Sure, why not?
So, anything else in the coffee world?
Not yet. We'll jump back into coffee. That's going to be my theme.
We'll have to do a second podcast within a podcast, sort of.
Coffee time.
Food and drink. Food and
yeah,
drink
that pretty much could be. Jade and HR, a look of food and drink in the HR world.
Hey, it works. Well, as you know, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn reading various articles, and Lars Schmidt, who also hosts the podcast, is the 21st Century HR Podcast. He's doing some work, and he came up with some statistics of what the population of HR looks like, and I'm going to share some of his results. And he came up with that the average HR departments consist of 71% female, 65% white, 10% black. The average age is 35 years old, and the average tenure is 2.63 years. Now, he was taking it down the line that HR needs to be more diverse themselves if they're going to be the cultural change agents of their organization. And, you know, in light of all the current events, you know, representing the population much better. And obviously that needs to be done. But I wanted to go down those stats a little bit as I see some other interesting things. From my personal experience, I'll agree with the male-female ratio. I'd say it's 70-71% female. That's pretty agreeable.
Yeah, I'm at 90% right now. So
yeah, where I would disagree is on the white side. I would say it's slightly less, but then again, we live in a very racially diverse area. If you get to some of the, you know, they say flyover country that might not be as racially diverse as we are in this area. So, you know, I'd slightly agree with the disagree with the race, because I think black has been a little bit more more prevalent in where I've worked.
I don't agree with that at all either, because I think it has, maybe that has been in the past, but I still think majority of the teams I've worked for have been white.
Majority white, but not only 10%.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking right now it's 10% in my current office.
Oh, okay.
With out of a team of 10, which is pretty sad, so.
Okay. Average age of 35, well, I blow that one out of the water.
Yeah, that's probably the most shocking one that I was thinking. And that's probably looking at, like, HR assistants up to vice VP of HR, and they're getting that in. I think if you looked at, like, management level HR, that would be a lot higher.
Yeah, I think
if you're lumping in the entry level, then of course it's going to jump down.
Well, you say that's what stood out to you the most. What stood out to me the most was the average tenure of only 2.63 years. Now, both of us blow that stat out of the water.
I mean, I think I've mentioned it before on other podcasts. This is the longest my average, if you look at my resume before this current position, my average was 2.8 years.
Well, I'm thinking tenure, when I read, and it didn't go into detail, I was thinking tenure would be in HR, not just in a job or in a company.
Right.
But, you know, most people I've worked with have even come in with more than that experience. And if they haven't, they've had it before they've left us. But that 2.6 years is what really drew my attention. And it made me think maybe this is the reason we're not always being taken seriously, because HR can be a high turnover position.
Oh, absolutely.
It can be stressful. It can be difficult. It's not what a lot of people think it is. And we've said that before, you know, the people and all that other fun stuff that maybe don't work out as well, or the people are promoted from within. Oh, Warren was great at, you know, being the receptionist, so let's make him the HR person now. Those things happen, and, you know, those aren't always transferable skills. But a third thing I thought about was, maybe managers and owners of small, medium-sized businesses not really knowing what HR is and not really understanding what they're hiring for. So that just really stood out to me. That really stood out to me when I was looking at this. And, you know, I don't think that 2.63-year tenure person is our target podcast audience listener. They haven't had that time to become jaded yet. You need some time in your...
So you're looking at tenure as 2.6 years of, like, average experience and not average staying at a position, at an HR position.
Yeah, I didn't read that much into it, so bad me, I didn't do all my homework.
That's okay. That's just I interpret that as, like, people stay at an HR job for 2.6 years. That's how I was interpreting it, not necessarily like the average experience of an HR worker is 2.6 years.
I hope you're right.
I guess it could be, yeah.
I really do hope you're right, because that was what really scared me, to think I'm almost an order of magnitude higher than that in my career. Really,
I don't feel that way, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, you get a lot of people that do that jump into HR. I mean, we worked at a company that was really great at getting people in the door at like an HR assistant position, and then people jumping in and going up to HR admin or business partner or generalist, you know, whatever you want to call it now. But
right.
People do grow within the, I think once you get your foot in the door in HR, it's one of those places where you're like, oh, HR, I can do this. And people tend to stick with it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's the whole other side of that too, but at least in my experience with myself included, I landed in HR not ever thinking, oh, I'm going to work in HR one day. I just kind of got there and was like, oh, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah. See, for better or worse, I directed my career there straight out of college. And I've been here ever since, which is another thing, is I'm one of the few people that, you know, came out of college with basically an HR degree. It's management, but all my elective courses were HR management. Yeah, I came out of college with an HR degree, and I'm still in it, where so many people I know either aren't in HR, they got their degree and are working in other areas, or their degree's in something else, criminal justice or something, and now they're in HR. So no, I thought that was some pretty interesting stats, but I will have to do a deeper dive and see what
that is interesting, but I don't think it's all not as surprising. Then the big surprise for me was the average age. That seems interesting. I'd love to see what stats they got for that, or, you know, how big of a group they got.
I'm figuring because the there's more people at the entry level and for the entry level position. So there's, your department might have 5 HR associates, you know, people with 1 to 3 years of experience, but you only have 1 VP HR. So
they'll
probably pull down the curve a little bit. But no, that's just some interesting stats I thought I found, and it just made me think about the industry a little bit and where I've been and where I've, you know, what's happened where we work and where we've worked and things like that.
Where are we going?
Where are we going?
Where do we go from here? That's the question we all ask.
What's my purpose in life?
Hopefully we're not going to failures, and mainly failures when it comes to talking on the phone or conference calls. So that was a big thing that I thought was really funny, and I found an article and I found a funny Reddit story, and the Reddit story was titled Mute Button Failure.
Oh gosh.
And I think we've all had little stories of thinking we were on mute and saying something. This one comes from Reddit user, they deleted their name, but it was a Tales from a Call Center was the subreddit. They said, I'll just call them Todd. They said, I work in a call center for a mortgage company. One day I was talking to this guy who was just not getting it. He kept asking the same question over and over again. I kept answering it over and over in different ways. Finally, the fifth time I hit the mute button, and said, oh my fucking God, it's like a game of who is on first. The borrower, we don't call them customers, is just like, okay, I just heard that. I just look at my phone. The mute button is not red, meaning it didn't work. They had reconfigured the phone, so you have to hit mute twice. Good times.
Thanks for letting me know about that.
So,
The mute button in conference calls, just general phone calls. But yeah, that saves careers, that mute button, or it can end some careers too.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
if you're that person that calls her. Well, I don't have this in my show notes, but Susan Lucas, the evil HR lady, put out today an article about a person who was fired from their job because they couldn't keep their kids quiet in the background during Zoom meetings and conference calls and things like that. And they fired her. And I was like, wow, that was an interesting little read this morning.
Yeah, that is interesting. I'd be curious to what premise has that person been warned several times, like, hey, you need to find, you're obviously not able to do your job if you can't do a simple phone call with your kids there, so you need to find suitable childcare or...
But right now, you know, in many places, childcare, I don't know about Virginia, is it not available, not open again yet?
Daycares have been able to stay open. They're just they're on a limited basis. So if you don't maybe have an essential job and your school doesn't have room, then you might not be able to have it. But I know for us, we haven't had an issue. The daycares have been open. And
Good. No, that's, you know, and the article went on to say, can they do it? Yes. Is there anything illegal about it? Probably not. Is it the right thing to do? Probably not. You know, there's better ways to handle it. But I read
you
that.
I feel like that's morning. Probably been going on a while to get to that point. It's not just a one-time
I would think
thing.
So. And of course, we're only going to hear the employee side who posted it on social media where it got picked up from. But yeah.
Yeah, that does tend to happen.
Yes.
That's kind of been the fun thing. We've talked about Zoom meetings and stuff. That's why the conference call thing just made me laugh, because there are just so many stories of people flushing the toilet not realizing they were on mute, or there was a story on Reddit about they were on a call and they thought they put their phone on mute, and they had like a very personal conversation with their spouse. And not realizing they were on mute, and they were on a conference call or something with like their boss and other higher level executives, and you know, just things like that. So
it goes back to even before pandemic times, just common sense and common courtesy in a conference call situation. If you're not speaking, be on mute. We don't need to hear your background. But it's more important now in the work from home environment. I don't want to hear your dogs. I don't want to hear your kids. I don't want to hear, you know, whatever else is going on in your world, you know, on this conference call. Just keep it on mute. That's, you know, we would do orientation virtually, and the number of people I'd have to ask, okay, I'm getting feedback from somebody. Can you turn your, please place your phone on mute so we can get through this?
Yeah, I think some people are, it seems to be more common practice. I've been on so many Zoom calls now for implementations or just regular team meetings, and everyone seems to be a lot better at automatically going to that mute until it's your turn to shine.
Exactly.
So, time to shine. So.
Exactly. Well, I had a couple of more statistics to throw at you. I just this week got my summer 2020 copy of HR Magazine. And it had one of those infographics in there, and the headline of it was 30% of employees actively avoid going to HR with a problem. And then it breaks down the stats a little bit further. So it said 38% of these people said the issue seemed too minor. 38% said HR didn't enforce policies equally. 35% said they don't trust HR to help. 31% said they feared retaliation. And 23% said they'd witness or experience poor HR, hurtful management, or discrimination. I just found those statistics also very eye-opening for a couple of reasons. First, perception is reality when it comes to those type of things. We can be the best HR department that's ever been assembled, but when you have employees with that perception, that's going to be reality regardless of what the facts are. So, you know, that's the first thing that came to my mind, because employees, we talk about it all the time. Ooh, better be quiet. Here comes HR. They don't trust HR. They don't want to engage with HR unless they have to. But I had some other things about it. If the 30% of people are actively avoiding going to HR with a problem, you know, taking off the jaded hat, if you have a problem, let someone know. You know, talk to someone. If it's your manager, your your manager's manager, HR, somebody, let them know what the problem is. But the first stop should be your supervisor, not HR in most cases. So you can work out those problems directly. And if you can't, then that's where HR can sort of step in.
Yeah, I agree with that. That perception is always going to be an issue. And those, some of those are kind of scary to hear, like in HR.
Yeah.
You're just like, that's some of those stats are a little, you know, you're not going to be the favorite department. You're never going to be the go-to department. And that's, fine.
You know, there's so many people, unfortunately, losing their jobs, getting furloughed, reduced hours. And a lot of times it's HR delivering that type of news. So, we're the bad guys, especially now when we can actually be more of the good guys. But it's just the perception thing. The next stat that they said was 38% said the issue seemed too minor. If there's a problem, you're not willing to address it, then in my mind, it's not really a problem. So that's sort of a non-stat. I hope those are the things are, Patrick parked in the spot I normally park in. It's not assigned parking or anything or whatever. These little minor things. But getting to HR not enforcing policies equally. Once again, it's a perception issue. Do the employees at large know what sort of disciplinary action has been or has not been taken on another person? Hey, I did something really boneheaded and I'm on the final written warning before I'm out the door. But the rest of the employees don't know that. They just see me back at my desk the next day and they don't think anything's been done. And, you know, you can't go into too much detail. Yeah, we wrote Warren up for that. And, he's on his way out the door. You're not going to tell that to the other employees. Hopefully not, at least. But, it's another perception issue. And there's nothing that can be done to solve that. You can tell them, hey, we investigated the issue. We did and we've taken action, which we think will resolve the issue, is what you tell the employee who brings up the complaint. And there's not much more you can do.
Yeah,
They don't trust HR. That's another thing. It goes back to, don't talk to HR. You know, here comes HR. You know, why not trust HR? What specific things have happened in their world that make us think that HR is the bad guy? Or is it just that TV stereotype HR person that they're thinking of versus the real HR person that's out there that can potentially do some help?
Or just the company in general doesn't facilitate a very good, transparent
policy. And the company culture will play a lot.
Yeah.
A huge role in that. Culture and the way HR is treated by upper management is if they're treated like dogs by upper management, then the employees aren't going to have any faith in them at all. People have seen that in their careers. Fearing retaliation, you know, once again, what are we talking about? Or experience poor HR, hurtful management or discrimination. First, what is their definition of poor HR? Probably means not getting the result they wanted when they made their complaint. They wanted Warren fired. They didn't want to, see him back at his seat the next day and things like that. And it goes back to maybe this is where we see the average person only having 2.6 years of tenure. You know, it's different.
Yeah, it could be.
But no, I find these stats interesting. I find them a little bit misleading. I just wish this was just sort of one of those infographics. I wish there was so much more to dive into. I could have read a full article on that.
Well, I think one thing that can help with some of these issues is the right kind of hiring and finding the right cultural fit and all those things. I think companies spend more time on just really nailing that cultural fit for their new hires can be, it helps in all levels of it and it helps HR not have to deal with this stuff. So I found this company in Australia called, I think it's probably pronounced Xero. It's X-E-R-O.
Okay.
And what I think it's their CEO. I just clipped pieces of the article. So unfortunately I turned all my internet off because our Zoom call right now is going nuts on my end. So everything is on airplane mode, but I found this article and I just thought it was a really awesome way to test an employee. And it's not a programming test or a logic test or anything like that. I'm just going to read a few snippets of this article. I think it's really great. It says, in every interview, Trent is the CEO, takes hopeful employees around the corporate office for a walk and talk. During the conversation, he casually brings them down to one of the kitchens. He ensures that, no matter what, they leave that kitchen with a drink in hand. While he does have an interest in the applicant's responses to his questions and what they bring to the interview, all of that is for naught if they don't pass Trent's test. And it concerns what they do with their coffee cup at the end of the interview. So he says, we take a drink back, have our interview, and one of the things I'm always looking for at the end of the interview is, does the person doing the interview want to take that empty cup back to the kitchen? Do they just leave it on the table? Do they walk the cup right back to the kitchen and wash it? So basically, and I'll just some of the rest of it, he really is like, he's literally making sure this person takes a cup from the kitchen, whether it's coffee or whatever, and then is looking at what they do with it. Because he says if you walk through their kitchens, they're always immaculate. You know, their break room and kitchens, they're always clean and immaculate. They're always going to be shiny. And he has, I guess, had enough experience to know that if you have a person that actually takes the time to just wash their coffee cup after an interview, it just speaks volume for, I guess, their culture. And it seems to be working. I just thought that was such a brilliant idea, is that this small little gesture that some people don't even think about, but
right.
And I'm trying to think what I would do. I mean, if I actually had a coffee mug, there's no chance I could just leave it there for someone to do. I'm pretty anal about getting that kind of stuff clean and taken care of, but
I can see myself asking, what would you like me to do with the mug? Asking.
Yeah.
You know, do they have a return place for them? Do they have, I don't know. What their procedure is or what their practice right. is there.
But no, I just thought that was such a cool and different thing I never heard about. And I was just looking at, you know, coffee things like, well, this is perfect. This is just a really neat business practice.
That is. Yeah. That is cool. And it tells the consideration. I think you can judge, hey, how considerate is this applicant? Are they just going to leave the mug on the counter and go? Or are they going to, you know, I guess there's varying levels of what you do. You do nothing. You put it on the counter and go. You put it in the sink and go. You wash it and go.
Yeah. Or
there's so many variables that can happen. I would love to know all the, you know, what he thinks. Okay. What if you do ask, hey, what would you like me to do with this mug, you know, that I'm finished? Maybe they just want to say, hey, keep it as a souvenir Zero Company mug or something. I don't know. After your interview.
Yeah, it's true. What if people just they just take the mug home?
Yeah.
Thanks for the interview.
That's a way not to get the second interview.
That's funny. Yeah, he actually did it on, he talked about this on a podcast. I might try to find that interview. I'll be curious. So.
That is pretty cool.
Anything else?
Well, I do have one other topic, and it's yeah. not related to anything else. You know, I was heavy on the statistics on the first two sections, and you've been talking about a lot of coffee today. But last thing I had was about employees calling out sick. And as much as we hate to say the term, the new normal is going to change. This new world, new things. But, you know, I was thinking all about this calling out sick business. And since graduating from college, which was in the 90s, I've called out sick from work exactly 3 times. On September 10th, 2001, I took a long weekend and didn't get home in time. I was living in D.C. Didn't get home till 4 a.m. on September 11th and called out sick just because I was too tired. And that's why I told my boss, actually. So that was one time. The other 2 times were for kidney stones. I was sent home from work once. I was told to go home. Warren, you're trying to be a trooper. Go home. We don't want you here right now. But it's been a long time since I've done it. But with the new normal, people shouldn't be wearing that, hey, I've never been sick in 5 years or called out in 5 years. The new normal should be, I'm not feeling well. Let me think of everybody else. Be considerate, going back to the coffee cup test.
Sure.
Be considerate of others. And let me just stay home. Or, hey, can I work from home today or do something else? But in the past, it's always been, you know, do companies ask for details or doctor's notes or anything along those lines? And sometimes if you ask for details, you're just opening yourself up for just an extreme bout of TMI. So, and doctor's notes, they're too easy to get. Doctor will write a note for anything. I got injured outside of work once over a weekend, And I noticed, I didn't even ask for it, in my packet, when you leave the doctor's office, the urgent care center, I had a note excusing me from work for 3 days. We never even talked about anything like that, but it was included in my packet. So, you know, then there's the companies that require a doctor's note for absolutely everything. And I don't want a note if you're, you know, who has to deal with that? All that potentially sensitive information or anything else. Don't want to deal with it. I used to really like the all-in-one PTO plans where you're either there or you're not. And but since COVID, once again, my thoughts are changing. Maybe I would like a separate bank of sick days so that I don't have to use my vacation for when I am sick, because I'm going to be more cautious about not coming to work when I'm not feeling 100% now. So,
yeah.
And I don't want to get political, but I think mandatory paid sick leave is coming down the pipeline. You know, we saw it introduced for small, medium businesses during COVID-19. You know, I think it's going to be expanded upon. But what is the best practice? What is a best practice? Is the next logical step? How are you going to handle these sick days?
How can employees find ways to take advantage of it? Find out next time.
They will take advantage of it. But, you know, my personal opinion is, don't ask. Hey, you're not feeling well. Great. Don't come to work today. We'll cover it. You get, you know, a bank of 3, 5, however many sick days you get, and you're just dinged one off your bank. But once you get beyond those allotted sick days, that's when things can come into play. I don't know. I've just been given a lot of thought, seeing that, you know, the world has changed a lot over the last 3 months. And see what, you know, where are we going from here?
Yeah, I don't know. So the world's changing, but I think everyone's trying to get back to normal, which is just going to cause more sick days. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We've seen the states that have opened up too early, my state being one of them. We actually took a step backwards instead of going to phase 3 like y'all are doing up in Virginia. We took a step backwards to tighten things up again because it wasn't managed well from the word go.
Speaking of being sick, I'm sick of not getting any feedback on this podcast we're doing. So, Warren, what can the people do to help spread the word and give us some feedback?
Well, we want you to spread the word, and we can tell from our statistics we are getting some people spreading the word about us. So continue to tell someone you know who will get a kick out of this podcast. Tell them about it. Tell them, hey, you got to listen to these guys. Connect with us on your favorite social media platform. We have, we're on all of them, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, we're there. So find us there. Also, we want your feedback. We want to know what you're thinking. Do you have an awesome story? We know you do. A suggestion, maybe, hey, y'all should cover this topic, or I had this experience. Have a question for us. Maybe we can give you some awesome advice. But also, you can leave a review on us on your podcast player that allows it, like such as Apple or Podchaser. But we want those stories. We want your feedback. We want to hear from you.
Absolutely. I'll take a quick moment to thank you to the Underscore Orchestra for the use of their song Devil with the Devil that we use for our intro and outro music. And we like to end an episode with a lovely best practice for you to take with you and just really help the workplace be a better place. So, Warren, how are you going to... Do you have one for us tonight?
I do.
All right, cool. Let's go for it.
So I want you to go around. Don't be subtle at all. Go around your workplace and put fake little video cameras all around your workplace, pointing them directly into people's workstations. And make sure everybody knows and sees what you're doing and pretend to check them out. Then later walk by a certain employee's desk and pretend to answer. So say, hey, yeah, I am by Patrick's desk now. You're supposed to be looking at him, not on me. Or something like, oh, camera 23, is it down? They just moved it. You know, let them know. Just plant a little feeling of where Big Brother is watching you.
I love it. Yeah, that's perfect. Workplace morale, that's a booster.
Yes. Productivity. Well, beatings will continue until productivity increases.
Exactly. And morale improves. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Jaded HR. I am Patrick Consellis.
And I'm Warren Workman, and we're here helping you survive HR one what-the-fuck moment at a time.